So, good evening, councillors. Welcome to the Cabinet on the 7th of July 2022. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, under local authorities executive arrangements, meeting and access to information, England Regulations 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recording is not under the council's control. The next item one is apologies. We have apologies from Councillor Harper Davies, who is attending virtually, and also the leader, Councillor Jonathan Morgan, is attending remotely. Item two, disclosures of pecuniary and registrable and non-registrable interests. Has anybody got any of those to declare? No? Very good. Leaders' announcements. Item three, there are no announcements. Minutes of the previous meeting, 9th of June 22. I propose you accept those. Can I have a second there? Everybody in favour? Yeah, let's pass that. Questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. There are no questions submitted. So the first substantive item is a charge of grants. And we have Councillor Lee Harper Davies here to introduce the report, and then we will hand over to Verity Graham. So, Lee, if you would like to introduce the report.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. Hi, everybody. Good evening. The Trauma Grants for you this evening is Trauma Community and Facility Grant Applications. The purpose of the report is to give considerations to the applications received in this particular round. It gives me a great pleasure to bring this report to Cabinet to give continued support to so many organisations that do such great work. I'd like to bring to the attention of Cabinet that the application form has been shortened and devised to ensure that relevant questions are asked of the applicant, which is a more simplified process. The actual grant, the budget for community grants is £50,000, and 20 applications were received for funding in round one. And this report recommends that 12 applications are supported and are before you on page one. The amount awarded in total is £23,050, leaving a balance of £26,950 for future community grants later in this year. It is excellent just to see a wide range of applications as usual. There are two community facility grants to be awarded to Liverpool Town Cricket Club towards new accessible doors and to Wineshall Memorial Hall for 9,004 replacement floor. I'm happy to hand over to Verity to take any further questions. Thank you, Deputy Leader.
Thank you. Verity.
I'll just assume it's the report as read, and if there's any questions, I can take them. Just to clarify, it's 17 applications that got funded in this round. So the other thing just to add, you'll notice that we have looked at other funding sources that we knew were available, that some of the grants made criteria, so we've made use of those in order to increase the amount of communities grants for the next round. So where possible, we've either contributed funding from things like the Community Safety Partnership or the Contain Fund, just to let you know. That's the process, sorry.
That's okay. Janet.
Sorry, can I just ask Adrian whether, because I live in Wineshall but had nothing to do with the application for the Memorial Hall, should I declare an interest?
Not if you're just a resident in the village.
Okay.
I did have to formally show my support for it.
In that case, you probably should. So it would be a non-registrable interest under the new code of conduct, and you'd have to consider whether or not you feel you have an open mind in relation to supporting the application.
I have an open mind.
Thank you. Thanks, Jenny. Thanks, Adrian. So, has anybody else got any questions for?
Bertie, can I just ask, does giving a grant to an organisation preclude us giving some of our £500?
No. Okay. No, all the members' grants, so it's only strategic partners that are restricted, and even they can have members' grants or apply for facilities, but they can't access the community grants. But apart from that, that's the only restriction. Oh. Yes, because previously you funded the wellbeing ones through members grants, and we've funded them as well. So.
And intend to again, despite the best efforts of Women Coin.
Thank you. Thanks, Alvarez. Sure, then. You have a question.
Thank you. It's just, you've kind of part answered it already, actually, in your intro. But it's the Community Safety Partnership Fund. Obviously, that's one of the ones where we've pulled on other funds to be able to offer more to the groups. Where does that fund come from?
The Police and Crime Commissioner's Office.
Okay, so it's not anything that we...
No. It's an external fund that is given by the Community Safety Partnership.
And is that promoted in any way? Do we help promote that to groups, or is it just that you're aware of it?
It's allocated by the Community Safety Partnership depending on need. So sometimes they approach organisations, and in other cases they can invite people to bid, but it's very much need-driven and restricted within the OPCC's particular governance for the CSPs of that year. Sometimes they have priorities.
So if you see an opportunity of a project that looks like it fits in with that, would you then contact them to say, we feel like this would be a good project and we're going to part support it if you're able to part fund it as well?
So in those cases, we went to the CSP and said there is this project. Obviously, engaging children and stuff, particularly as the summers come in, is a definite need at the moment. So it was quite straightforward, and it again meets the criteria of the Police and Crime Commission.
Yeah, lovely, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Verity. So, if there are no other questions, I'll invite Councillor Boker to make the proposal.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. I'd like to propose that the community grants and the community facilities grants that are listed on page 12 and 13 of the report for approval and for the reasons given at the top of page 14.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can I have a second of that? Thank you, Shona. Can we see all those?
Can I just be clear? Sorry to interrupt. That's all of recommendations 1 to 4 on pages 11.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's you're right. It's recommendations
1 to 4.
1 to 4. The reasons 1 to 4 on agenda pages 12 to 14. Yeah. Okay. So if everybody's happy with that, can I see all those in favour? So that's everybody. I'll just ask. Lee, if you were in the room, would you be in favour of this?
Absolutely, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. So the next item.
John.
No,
John.
No.
Accused himself.
No.
He's doing the ironing.
It could well be. All right. So the next item is the outturning report for the year ended the 31st, thank you Verity, 31st of March 2021. So this is a report that I'm introducing, and we have the outturning report, we've got requests to carry forward $33,384,000 on the general fund and $2,985,600 on the housing revenue account. Now, there are substantive reasons behind why that is the case, mainly because of the Enterprise Zone, Bedford Square project, the regeneration projects at the Science and Enterprise Park, and affordable housing budget, and also the Disabilities Facilities Grant. But these monies will be carried forward, and the Shepshed Town Centre project. The capital plan is fully funded as shown. It is a historic report. It sounds a substantial amount, but there really are very clear reasons. I mean, things like the Enterprise Zone was a £15 million budget, and the town deal and very other items within the report make it clear what it is. Now, I'll hand over to you, Leslie, and is there anything else you would like to add to that?
Thank you, Councillor Barclay. I think it's just to add on the slippage, the regeneration budget and the EZ budget, that's sort of 28 million of the 33. that will be subject to further cabinet reports in future. Those schemes were earmarked as part of the capital strategy going forward, so they are a place marker or a provisional capital scheme at the moment. So that's the big chunk of the capital slippage. The table one shows the actual capital outturn position, and we've got categorised it into three schemes. We've got live schemes. They're the ones that are currently being worked on by the CBC, and that's underspent by 3.9 million. The provisional schemes is what I've just explained, and then we've got third party schemes, which are sort of externally funded schemes, Section 106 schemes. So just to summarise, the capital plan, the slippage will be carried forward and added to the new capital plan, so we'll have a new capital plan. So in essence, Appendix 1 and Appendix 2 of this report will be merged together, and we'll be monitoring that capital programme through SLT and the SLT board. So we'll be doing adjustments through the capital amendment report for 22-23. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Solicitor, for that. That's made that very clear. So, Shona, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. It's on item 10 on page 54, so the acquisition of affordable housing to meet housing need. So we've got quite a large slippage on that, and I'm just wondering what the particular reason was why we weren't able to acquire as many properties as we maybe expected, and how we plan to address that in the following year. Is it kind of just a market position, there aren't properties available? I understand that if that money isn't spent, it has to be returned, so I'm guessing that there's a plan so that we can get those properties purchased.
Yes, in relation to the budget, it is the right to buy receipts that we've received over a number of years. So although we've got a slippage, we always make sure the money that needs to be spent within a given time scale is within the previous financial year. So we try and keep ahead of, as you've just said, we have to spend it within a given time. With the current resources, we have got our target of 10 to 12, which we did hit, and that is what we will continue to do. If we get to a point where we're getting closer to the spend threshold, then the resources will be focused more on that than bringing empty homes back into use. So we've got the funding a year ahead in some respects to make sure that we don't have to pay it back.
Lovely, thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Alison. Any other questions? No. So I propose recommendations 1 and 2, the reasons outlined on page 51. The recommendations 1 and 2, reasons 1 and 2 on page 51 of the report. Could I have a seconder for that, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Thank you, James. All those in favour? That's everybody. And I think the leader's indicating he would is in favour if he was in the room and could vote, and so is Councillor Harper Davies. Thank you both. So we move on to the next item, which is the General Fund and HRA outturn report for the year ended 31st of March 2022. There are, as outlined on the report, we have ended up with a stronger position than we envisaged. Have 6.6 million pounds worth of reserves to carry forward into 22-23. We benefited from underspends in 2020-2021, which were carried forward, and we are similarly going to benefit in this year. The majority of the underspend is down to COVID grants that we have received, and also increased national non-domestic rate income that we've received. It is good, but I don't want people to go away with the idea this is historic, and it is as a result of a lot of changes that have been made, savings that have been made, but as we move forward into 22-23, we still face substantial challenges. I mean, I think the funding in 23-24 is going to reduce by over $1 million, and again, similarly, in 24-25, we have other things like inflation, which is going to impact, is running at 10%, and various things like the environment bill coming forward. But the point I'd make is we are in a solid financial position. We have benefited from, sometimes we have put pressures in for presumed loss of income which haven't materialised, or which we've managed to claim back from the government. Some of those, there are areas where we have lost money, and that's in the car park income and stuff like that. But overall, we are better than we thought. We thought we were going to use £800,000 worth of reserve. We actually didn't use £800,000, but we could put roughly £800,000 into reserves. So, but we will need it. A lot of those reserves are earmarked, and there's absolutely no doubt about it. We've faced challenges in the years going ahead. We're all right this year, we're probably all right next year, but we are going to have to move things about. But we will do that, and that's what we're going to plan out. Now, I'll hand over to Leslie to, if you'd like to point out any other points that you feel relevant.
Thank you, Councillor Barclay. I think just to highlight, in addition to those comments, when we set the 21-22 budget, obviously COVID was very much in our minds, and we did put in £885,000 on some of the income lines. We reduced the car parks, we reduced the town hall markets and fairs. Like Councillor Barclay said, the car parks, actually we did need to do that. They did make a deficit. However, the town hall, it did get reopened in September, and all the concerts and shows were able to sort of recommence. The pantomime went ahead, so that provided a favourable income stream to us, so that's actually helped the bottom line. In terms of the HRA, we made a £2.9 million surplus. The reason, or the main reason for that surplus, was the we didn't have to use, we budgeted for a revenue contribution into our capital plan for the £2.9 million. We didn't have to use that because the spend on the capital plan was lower than we budgeted for, I think due to COVID and other things. So that £2.9 million's been added to the HRA financing fund, so that now is sitting at £14.5 million, along with some major repair reserves, and that money will sort of be ring-fenced for HRA debt repayments and future sort of capital plan requirements. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. I just have one question. We've got the commercial reserve as well, haven't we, for the commercial, and that's performed quite well, hasn't it? It's helped us a lot. Yeah.
Yes, we did actually budget to provide £500,000 of the rental income that we've been getting in on the commercial properties. We budgeted to top the commercialisation reserve up, so that's sitting at about £900,000. So that's there for sort of, you know, future losses if we do need it. We will look again at the budget process and possibly top that up a bit more to cover any future losses on that. So that's all sort of part of budget planning.
Yeah, thanks very much. Has anybody else got any questions on the budget? No, on the last year's budget. No, that's fine. So I would recommend, I make recommendations one and two, for reasons one and two, on page 62 of the agenda. So, Richard, could I invite you to second that? Thanks, Grant. All those in favour? So, that's fine. So, Leader and Leader both showing that they're in favour. Thanks very much. So, the next report we have is the amendments to the annual procurement plan. We now have Councillor Seaton, who hopefully isn't making a cup of tea and is online. And I will ask her to produce to do her report. Ah, there you are, Brenda.
As if by magic.
Yeah, you look like the sort of pantomime. No, I must get this right. Yeah, runs a carry on.
Thank you very much. Well, it was satisfactory. I'd like you to take it as read, but I need to add some context to it. It was satisfactorily explained that the proposed changes were necessary and remove additional steps to speed up the process, and really didn't change the outcome. However, the majority of the discussion was centred around the audiovisual equipment. It went slightly off tact there. But we were offered an explanation of what we were worried about was the payback and the future plans for the County Council building in the future. So as I say, we went slightly off tact there, but we came back and the Commission is happy to approve the recommendations as they are set out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brenda, for your report. An interesting meeting. So just to summarise the annual procurement plan, this is a standard report that is produced at the beginning of the year, and any amendments are come forward quarterly. Now, the report itself clearly identifies that there is not actually any added value by bringing this forward every quarter. The plan itself is a public document. It's actually published on the website, and any politically sensitive or any other reasons, if it was above £1 million, it would come to us anyhow. But there isn't the perception, scrutiny picked it up, there is no real reason for this to come through, and I'm hoping that the procurement rules will be changed by Justin Henry so that we don't see this again. I know this is a report that raises everybody's heartbeat, mine's gone up to 72, but there is no need for it to come through. So, it is very, very straightforward. You can see we have the annual procurement plan. The ones that are added this time, I think it's two contracts, they were queried at scrutiny. But I will hand over to Justin just to add his points to it.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. largely speaking, it's exactly as Deputy Leader has said. Probably just to reiterate the points that all of the controls around procurement remain the same. So the law, regulation, procurement processes, etc., those aren't being changed. This kind of annual notification of a procurement plan and then the quarterly updates is a fairly unusual beast. It's probably should be noted that you'll see papers come through cabinet on regular occasion whereby officers are actually requesting permission to undertake a procurement, and then asking for delegations to go ahead and award, or stating that they'll bring it back to cabinet for a decision if it breaches the threshold. All of that activity will still remain. So what this allows us to do is effectively go ahead and streamline the management of that process. Our procurement service manages the procurement plan on our behalf. And in effect, there are internal controls because as officers will want to add things to the capital plan, or they'll want to look forward to service delivery over the course of the coming year, they have to run all these requirements through the senior leadership team in any event. So there is no kind of wild west, if you like, around wishing to procure items, nor is the process fast and loose. So what I'm proposing is to say we eliminate the annual procurement plan in terms of its reporting nature to cabinet. We'll still have that with our procurement service, and we eliminate the updates, as members will be notified when anything that's of certainly breaches the financial threshold or is of political interest comes onto the plan.
Thank you very much, Justin. I think that's true. I mean, I think the main point taken from it is the procurement rules are not changing. The same procedures are in place, and there isn't the capacity of people, and I will still have a procurement team in there who will adhere to the rules, which are fairly well outlined in the report. Has anybody got any questions on that? Right, so I will propose recommendations 1 to 3 for reasons 1 to 3 on the page 2 of the report, and also note the scrutiny commission report. Thank you very much, Brenda, for your attendance tonight on that, and I think we have a few more items that you've cast your eye over, so we'll hear from you in a moment. So could I ask Jenny, please, to second that. Thank you. All yes. Those in favour? So that's, I can see the leader and Councillor Harper Davies are in favour as well. If they had been in the room, they can't vote. So that is passed. The next item on the agenda is the private sector housing enforcement policy. And again, we have a scrutiny commission report from Councillor Seaton. So, Brenda, please, if I could ask you to provide your report.
You will be delighted to know, but nothing further to say than what is in the notes of the meeting discussion, and the Commission are happy to approve the recommendations as set out. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. I'm going to ask Paul, have you a few words of introduction you want to say on this?
This is merely a formality in that this document needs to be fine-tuned every so often, perhaps error corrected, but more importantly bringing it in line with the latest legislation. And perhaps also worth mentioning, Councillor Seaton failed to say that both Alice and I were extremely embarrassed at the meeting, because it just turned into some 1960s loving, which they said what a fantastic job Alison had done, and praised the lead member apparently as well. The document is a formality which gives the lead member authority to make minor changes that may occur over this period.
That's very nice that you've got a fan base there. Then.
Just within scrutiny commission.
As long as you keep it within scrutiny, that's fine. Alison, I believe this is your last cabinet meeting, and it's appropriate before I ask you to introduce your report. Thank you for all your work. You're moving to better climes, and we wish you well in your new job, and thank you for all you've done. Yeah, it has been hard work. It has. So, Alison. Over to you.
Just a couple of points to add. Just to say the policy is based on corporate enforcement principles that were, I think, approved in 2018, so they're proportionate, they're consistent, and they're targeted. The legislation that's changed is detailed in paragraph 1, and it's just in the document, in the pack, it's pages 94 to 100, sets out clearly what action we will take, and appendix 1 details the costs that the council can claim back on the action that it's taking.
Okay, thank you. Has anybody got any questions on this report? James.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. I was just wondering, how many enforcement actions have been taken to date, please?
Okay, in the last financial year, so 21-22, we received 775 service requests into the private sector housing team, 115 of which were for disrepair reasons, so different things, whether it was guttering, whether it was accumulation of waste. And for those, we did issue 27 notices, one of which was a prohibition notice, so the property could no longer be used. One was from, for instance, like a caravan site for non-compliance. 8 were for drainage, and 8 were for where there was improvements required, so like holes in the roofs, damped, mould, etc., pests, accumulation of wastes. So it's a bit of a mixture, but it's probably about a quarter of the ones that we've received from disrepair that notices were served and actions taken.
Okay. Has anybody got any other questions?
A quick technical question to possibly Rob. When the reorganisation happens, we've passed resolutions saying that delegated authority is given to X and Y. Is it just automatically assumed that those positions have changed?
So the delegation, in part of the council report, we approved the revisions to the scheme of delegation as well, so it should follow on that we've got a consistent approach to be able to continue with those delegations. So the role as well I'm referring to in this report still exists in the structure, so there shouldn't be any issue with this particular one anyway.
Okay.
So any other questions? No other questions. So I'm going to invite Paul to make some recommendations.
I would like to recommend that first the private sector housing enforcement policy attached as Appendix 1 is approved. Secondly, that delegated authority be given to the head of strategic and public sector housing in consultation with the lead member for private sector housing to update the private sector housing enforcement policy on an annual basis, subject to there being no financial or human resource implications arriving from the proposals. And thirdly, that in the event of there being financial implications outside the existing approved budgets or resource implications exceeding the existing approved establishment arising from proposed revisions to the private sector housing enforcement policy, a further report on the proposed policy be brought to the Cabinet at the appropriate time and for the three reasons given in this report.
Thanks very much, and we're also going to note the scrutiny report on that, is that that's right. So, can I ask for a second for that?
Thank you.
All those in favour? That's everybody, and our two remote, the leader and Councillor Harper-Davies have indicated if they were in the room they would be in favour of that. So, thank you for that. The next item on the agenda.
Can I just say thank you to Cabinet for all your support and all the work I've done where I've been.
Thank you, Alison. We wish you well in the future.
Thank you.
So, the next item on the agenda is the procurement of environmental services, and we've got a scrutiny commissioner report. So, we've got Theo with us today to introduce it. So, Brenda, this is your moment.
Yeah. This is my final moment, and I feel I'm approaching.
It's not that bad, Brenda.
Right, be careful. Too much jubility going on there. Right, so please take it as read. However, I do want to add there was a little bit of understanding how difficult this will be going for option two with the current uncertainty of what we'll have to put in our bins in future. So it was acknowledged how difficult it is going to be, and it was also acknowledged that option three was going to be the best option following this doubt of what's happening in the future. So the Commission, having carefully considered, are happy to approve the recommendations set out.
Thank you. Brenda. Thanks for reporting. Give our thanks to the Scrutiny Commission. So we have with us Councillor Harper-Davies, who I think I would like to introduce the report.
Thank you, Councillor Barclay. So the report this evening is the contract procurement process for the provision of household recycling collection and street cleansing. Waste collection and street cleansing are a statutory function of the Council under the Environmental Protection Act 1990, and the procurement of contracts are also given by the Public Contracts Regulations of 2015. So here's my introduction. So our current contract with our service provider Serco comes to an end on the 31st of March 2024. It is good practice to start the process as early as deemed possible, hence this Cabinet report and the report before you this evening. At this moment in time, there's no provision within the contract to extend our current contract circle further. The process has a possibility of becoming more complex, as the Commissioner Chair mentioned, under the new conduct of new legislation within the government's new Environmental Act, potentially coming into play later on in the year, which will call upon further demands of our service. The report context reviews different commission options for the provision of boroughs recycling, waste collections and street collections beyond the current contract expiry,
As you're aware, the council currently own our own fleet of vehicles and they're currently housed in a deco in Mount Sorrel. So we need to ensure or be mindful that we, going forward, the contract needs to have the facility of a significant depo to house our vehicles. Set out in the report are a number of commissioning options for Cabinet to consider, and happy to hand over to Thea for any further questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Lee, for that introduction. So, Thea, you, if you'd like to add what, anything else you feel relevant, please do.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. I'm covered by the introduction made by Councillor Lee Harper-Davies. The report as soon has been read, so I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Has anybody got any questions they want to raise on this report?
Just out of interest, on the risk management, how can you, or how do you, not how can you, how do you work out the risk when you don't actually know the implications for the Environment Act? So it says you don't know what it's going to say, but you've assessed the risks as unlikely, major, moderate. Surely we'd just be saying we don't know what the risks are. And secondly, I think it's certainly my what I've heard from people talking about mandatory food waste collections, there's going to be a huge amount of resistance to doing that. They're just going to not do it. Do you see that could be a problem? So, two questions. How do you assess the risk? And secondly, do you think this could be a major sticking issue?
Thank you very much. Just in terms of question number one, in terms of the risk of the unknown, the way that we have tried to mitigate it is by choosing competitive dialogue as the preferred procurement process. So by having this procurement route, it allows us to amend the specification until the very late stages, so we feel confident that any changes will be reflected in the specification. So that's how we manage to mitigate and eliminate that risk. That's why we have said that it's of an unlikely likelihood. However, we know that the impact, especially could be financial, mainly financial, could be major, but we have had the commitment from the government that they will cover any additional costs. So that's the way that the financial risk is going to be mitigated. Now, in terms of food waste, which was the second part of the question, if it becomes mandatory, we will not have the option of not doing it. We have been exploring options on how we can put it in practice, either on our own or in collaboration with probably some other partners or local authorities. We know that when other authorities have trialed it, the response hasn't been great, so some of them have resulted in abandoning it, but if it becomes mandatory and we have to do it, we will make our best efforts. There is some best practice on how to make it work, so we will follow all best practices and make sure that it works for the residents of town, so that it's worth the investment.
Okay, thanks very much, Neil. I think that's terrible. I must say there are numerous challenges that could come up with that, but you have covered it very clearly there. So, I'm going to invite Councillor Boker to make the proposals on this item.
Thank you, Deputy Leader. I would like to propose the recommendations 1 and 2 for the reasons 1 and 2 on page 158 of the report.
Thanks very much. We're going to note the scrutiny report. So Paul, can I invite you to second
that? I'm happy to second that, Deputy Leader.
Right. Everybody in favour? You're a little bit premature there, can the people out of the room, the leader and Councillor Harbour Davies have indicated if they were in, they would be in favour of that. That's fine. So, putting your finger up like that, it's through. I don't know what was going on. Right, so the final item on tonight's agenda is the Health and Safety Annual Report. This is something which is good practice. It's a very clear report. It's actually a tremendous amount of work has been done. coming, both going into the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, to try and ensure that everybody is safe in the environment. And it's really quite, reading the report and seeing it, it is quite impressive. And the reasons, not totally explained, but because of the COVID and the lack of having as many people in the building, it seems as though if you look at the figures, they've actually gone down in the majority of cases. But it's interesting how much work has gone on, and this is an annual report which is most welcome. So I am going to hand over to Adrian, and also we have with us tonight Tony O'Brien, Corporate Health and Safety Officer. So between the two of you, I will leave it to you to decide who's going to do it.
You want to say something,
James? I think you're going to do it.
You did all the hard work.
I think that's true.
I don't think that's the case at all, actually. I think the hard work has been done by the officers, the managers and the heads of service. Think the fact that every head of service, as it were, has reached out when it was necessary for some additional support or some additional advice, I think demonstrates that there's actually a really established and mature management system in place here that's used in terms of safety.
Yeah, I agree.
I hope that the report is as brief as it needs to be, it makes sense, but obviously if there's any questions or any further clarification that any councillors would like.
Yeah. I think it's, Tony, you're obviously right. You've had the cooperation of the head of service directors, and so it is a combined effort, although I think there is quite a bit of work gone into it by you and your team as well, but it does require the cooperation of everybody. And thanks for what you've done. Now, has anybody got any queries or questions? No?
Yes.
Sorry, Paul.
Tony, I always ask a question on this report because it's so fascinating. There was a radio interview yesterday with some sort of pet psychologist. I don't think they call them pets anymore, do they? They're friends. The Royal Mail, and they were saying that there'd been a significant increase in attacks by dogs on post people, whatever they call them these days, because of COVID, because they've been cooped up. Do you think that could be a problem that our staff will have when they go around to houses? And secondly, is there a noticeable effect of COVID? I noticed trips and falls seem to have dropped quite dramatically.
I'll answer the second part there. I couldn't say about the reduction in any slips and trips. This last year, I think we've seen comparable footfall in and around the town centre on certain times of year, definitely. Within our officers' movements, they are, as it were, back to usual, back to pre-pandemic. So if there's a reduction, good, people are actually paying attention where they're putting their feet. So there's no real significant reason why that's reduced. The reporting mechanism remains as strong, so I'm still seeing a similar frequency of reports of near misses, etc. So it's not as though people aren't reporting, so that's another piece of assurance there. For the potential for unsocialised animals, dogs being the prime example, our officers who visit premises and also open spaces are more than familiar, as it were, with that. It's a recognised thing within our risk assessments, and we keep that as part of our process for consideration of entry into a corporate warning system, so that if necessary, advance notice can be given. To date, we've not seen any great spike in any incidents of that nature, but we'll continue to monitor it.
Okay, thank you. Jenny?
Any serious accidents other than
death?
Any serious accidents?
Nothing of note. The fact there were no riddles this year, we've had nothing that warranted reporting through the statutory mechanism.
Yeah,
that's
what I was trying to ask. Yeah.
Serious incidents.
Thanks, Paul.
Right, that's good. Thanks very much for that report, Tony. So I recommend to make the recommendations on page 170 of the report for the reasons given on page 170. Sharon, could I invite you to second that?
Yeah, happy second that.
Thank you. All those in favour? Yeah, that's everybody. And our remote attendees, the leader and Councillor Harper Davis, are also in favour indicated. So that concludes tonight's cabinet meeting, and thanks to all the others attending and the cabinet members.